Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Underserved, the podcast for the rest of the tech industry. I'm your host, Andrew Jelina. Today, I am joined by Robert Swift, also known as Swifty or Nixon by certain folks. We'll hear those stories later. A senior technical recruiter at Syrinx Consulting. Robert, welcome.
Thank you very much.
We've talked to Colin, who also does recruiting at Syrinx, but you've been in the trenches and you have an interesting angle. Didn't you used to actually be an engineer once upon a time?
Yeah. You know, the 90s was fun for everybody. I did a computer science minor at Stonehill. That was back in the days when hobbyist people were still building PCs to, you know, run stuff on them. And the intercollegiate network was just coming up and coming around. So
the interwebs?
Yes, it became the interwebs by the time I graduated school and started goofing around, and people were talking about, you know, who had the coolest email address.
Yeah, whether or not you had like a .org or a .edu or a .com.
Yeah, I totally had a .org. So yeah, I left, got into tech late, working for a couple investment firms doing their big rip printing stuff where take a normal person, you know, a week or two to build a book, and I could take it all from data and do it in about 15 minutes and then ship it to Austria or someplace. And only investment firms could afford that stuff back in the day. But now printing on demand is how everyone prints. Mm-hmm. There's very little of that other type of stuff. And I moved from that into being a network engineer, did networking. You know, I'm a cable and hands-on guy, so I can do my own Cat5. Right around the time that I started doing complex stuff with Windows OS and Linux, I moved into product deployments. And unfortunately, as a geek, because I could string sentences together, the companies that I was working for pushed me into pre-sales engineering and then the dreaded sales. killer of engineering careers.
You know, I know a lot of guys I went to high school with and that I knew from UMass that were engineers that ended up in sales engineering and kind of developed that outgoing side of their personality, ability to present complex topics to, you know, an audience that may or may not be technically complex.
Absolutely. And if you're about to make or start your own company or good long-term being a salesperson for technical careers, that's outstanding. One of the bigger issues, though, is if you're a technical person in the middle lanes. Mm. Tech folks, especially software developers, are so proud when they start accumulating project management titles. And, you know, the first thing as technical recruiters we do is we just push those down a couple bullet points, because if you look to project management, they won't look at you for the technical roles.
Interesting. So having sat on both sides of the desk, what interview tips would you have for developers?
The first thing that I would give as a tip for developers or engineers is enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is infectious. People can tell if you love what you do, and people love having people on their teams who like or are interested in their job. So the first thing I always tell people is enthusiasm. I also tell them silly stuff like with phone screens, stand up while you're talking on a phone screen. Smile when you're talking on a phone screen. It's the silliest stuff, but it changes people's perception.
It's only silly because you feel silly doing it. It really works.
It really does. The second tip, now that I did the phone stuff, is I make sure to tell people if you're doing a Skype interview, and this is the tip that will change how you do Skypes. A Skype interview is a production. If you were an AV geek in high school, or if you love, you know, the tech that goes into your computer or whatever, know that what you're doing is you're producing a show that is you. And so the first tip I tell people, don't look at your computer screen. Look at the camera. If you have to put a little eyeball on it next to it or something, like, do not spend the Skype interview staring at your screen. You want to give the person on the other side of the interview the impression that you are looking right at them when they are looking at their screen. Hmm. It's silly, but every person I've said who does it is like, it completely changed the interview. I was performing to the camera instead of performing to the screen that I was watching. Mm-hmm. And also not staring at the other person helped people. The two other tips I think that I would really give to people especially on phone screens, is what I call the five sentences and test model. And essentially, when someone asks you a question, Robert, how long have you been working in tech? I would craft an answer that I can provide in five sentences or less, and then end it by saying, is that the sort of experience you're looking for? Or does that help you understand? Is there anything further I could elaborate on? Those types of questions, they serve a purpose that people don't expect. The first thing it does is if you finish in five sentences, it's a brief snippet that almost anyone can handle. I just did five sentences since the beginning of this. The other thing is that when you end with a question, it indicates to the person on the other side of the phone that you're done speaking. That way, there's kind of a relaxation, like, oh, yes, it's my turn to speak. That sort of model, a lot of people tend to ramble on when they do phone interviews because there's so much to explain. I mean, tech is as big as all outdoors. Your engineering experience, even as a junior person, is pretty broad. You always want to keep it focused. In five sentences, I think, tends to sharpen people's mind for that. So out of all of my tips, enthusiasm, the five sentence model, being positive about what you do, is the fourth tip. It's the most important thing, especially for senior developers. They like to make sure that right up front, they let interviewers know what they do not do. Often I have been involved with people who are just brilliant engineers who have gone to length to say, well, I've never been a product manager. And so the feedback we get is that, I was talking to them. They say they weren't a product manager. We talked for 15 more minutes and then it was over. I'm going to pass. And I would follow up from that feedback from the client and go back to the candidate and say, what did you say? And they say, well, I've never had the title product manager. I said, well, what are the elements of being a product manager? And they listed them off. And I said, you've been doing that for 15 years. It's like, yeah, but I've never had the title.
So I read about something today. I just saw a headline of an article on Reddit. And I haven't actually gone back to read the article, but I think I know from the context clue what it means. It was a woman talking about how she had just garnered herself a new role. And she's like, goodbye, imposter syndrome. Like, I've broken out. And I think the meaning there is that everyone sort of feels like they're not qualified or they haven't walked 2 miles in those shoes yet and they're not that person yet. But the rule usually is fake it till you make it or act as if.
And engineers hate that expression. And you're not faking it till you make it. It's a sales trick that I want to teach every technical person. It's not a fake. Talk positively about what you do. And if you feel in a phone interview like you are going to say, I don't do that, I vaguely remember school, you want partial credit, instead of saying no, before you say no on a phone screen, ask a question. If you say, have you ever worked on a high availability network and you've done some work on high availability, don't say, I've done some work on high availability. Say, I've done 1 or 2 years on high availability using the following things. For all you know, that is exactly what the interviewer is looking for, or it's a little short and then you can talk to it later and I'll give that tip. But always just say what your experience is and talk positively about it. When you start adding words like some, a little, none, we are all as geeks just comparing ourselves to the smartest person we know. And the imposter syndrome is exactly that. So the tip I give to people is, if you're going to say no in a phone screen, ask a question. Say, do you mean this? Or what are the responsibilities of a product manager in this role? And they'll say A, B, and C. And you're like, well, I've done A and B. And just let C sit. Mm-hmm. If you haven't done C, they'll ask you. They'll say, well, you didn't mention C. And they say, well, I've done a little bit of C. How much? This much. And whenever you say little, you can say instead, I've done C at this level. And they'll say, that is the level we're looking for. But so many times, like more than I can count, people have knocked themselves out of contention. It's not fake it. Just say what you do. Speak positively about your experience and your partial credit and try not to give it limiting factors like, well, I do a little of this. Nobody does a little of anything. Technology is magic. You're doing enough. So, let the other person decide what they want to ask you to enhance their understanding of your experience, but always make sure you're just talking positively.
Can you tell us some of your more interesting pursuits or things you've seen in software development culture?
My first experience with the real geek community was in the 90s after college, where they have that part of the Matrix where there are hackers hanging out with cool kids in club clothes. That was actually happening.
Welcome to the real world.
I know not every software development nerd has that experience, but I can tell you for a fact, in the inner city in Boston, it was actually happening. There were black and white hat hackers hanging out at industrial, goth, and gay clubs and, you know, exchanging information. And one of those exchanges, you know, talking about my PC setup and how I'd built it myself. And one of my friends said, well, what's your email address? And I'm like, I can't afford an email address. And he's like, you don't have to afford an email address. What do you want it to be? And that's how I met the group at apocalypse.org. I still maintain a good long distance friendship with the person who was responsible for that domain. Was the first person to write the TCP IP stack to an IBM PC on a network. And he did it when he was at MIT, but had been previously involved in that stuff and been on the Internet Council and was the first commercial company to package FTP software for businesses. Because you and I could just FTP something over the internet. Just looking up the code wasn't that difficult, but companies that had just this enormous load of data to move from one place to another, the idea of sending it over the series of tubes was terrifying. And so back in the 80s, they wrote one of the first big commercial software packages to transfer data for companies. They had created a little sandbox community in Cambridge, and it collected lots of interesting people. And that is how I ended up with the nickname Nixon, which was, someone comes to you and says, I'm going to give you a free email address. It's at apocalypse.org. Did you ever like do the thing where somebody says some ridiculous series of words and you say, that's what I want my band name to be? That was sort of the same environment in the 90s when people were handing out .org email addresses to exclusive places. Like, what is the coolest thing I can think of that I also won't be embarrassed later on telling people? And so I thought it would be hilarious to be Nixon at theapocalypse.org. Because again, I'm Robert Swift. I was born in the 70s and my name is Robert. So everybody naturally calls me Bobby or Swifty. And there's like 9 million Roberts in every class I've ever been in New England. So the idea of, you know, having an email name, and what happened was I would tell people my name, Rob or Robert or whatever, and I'd give them my email address and they just started calling me Nixon. Because that was my email address. First, they would address it to me in emails. Then when I was in places publicly, at bars and in clubs and hanging out socially, then everyone just starts calling you Nixon. And then I start introducing myself as Nixon.
Well, I'm not a crook.
I have a similar like nickname story. I was in college. Everyone started giving themselves comic book character names. I had some hair that was dyed at the time. Some would joke it looked like a flaming skull. So they said, oh, Ghost Rider. You couldn't have a username that long under Unix, I think. It was like a 7-character limit. So I was Gride, G-R-I-D-E, at student.umass.edu, I think it was.
Nice.
And then the Gride thing kind of stuck with me after I graduated. Went to the Hackers on Planet Earth conference. It's held by 2600, the Hacker Quarterly, in New York. My nickname there ended up being G-Ride. In fact, I just found my name tag from that the other day. Let's hear from Colin about why technologists might want to work with Syrinx to find their next gig.
Are you in the software consulting industry and sick of posting your resume just to get bombarded by recruiters? They tell you all about opportunities that aren't even in your skill set or even where you can commute to? Looking for a contract role in this market is a full-time job. Let Syrinx do that work for you. This is what Syrinx has specialized in for the last 20 years, both in the Boston market and beyond. Are you a full-time employee that is considering consulting options to have that best of both worlds compensation model? Do you want more remote flexibility? Or do you want to choose that specific tech stack you want to work with? Perhaps you want an increase in pay, but you're stuck in a compensation freeze at your current job? Or maybe you just want to be that hired gun that every company needs to ship products and scale. You can email us at apply, that's APPLY, at syrinx.com, or call us at 888-5-SYRINX. Spend your time writing code and let us handle your job search. Contact us today at syrinx.com.
All right. Thank you, Colin. Let's get back to the action with Swifty. The nicknames do tend to hang around, but I imagine you put that nickname to use online gaming. Are you into playing anything online?
So it was an original PC gaming racer from back in the day, lots of betas. I won't even name the diseases I used to have, you know, of the MMO type stuff. Out of the gaming stuff, I'd say I pay attention to a lot of that more these days than I even did back in the 90s. You know, a lot of people who you wouldn't expect have come into gaming in the last 10, 15 years. And so I use Nixon online. I mix that with, don't give out my Xbox thing, but there's some combination of that. That's, you know, my Xbox and other Steam names and stuff. One of the things that I get that a lot at is at conferences. I always use that name at conferences. When I met my fiance, I met her at Aresia, which is one of the oldest or older Boston sci-fi literature conventions. But it's everything. It's gaming, it's geek culture, it's cosplay, it's all those things. But it's not like the conventions where you go and it's like wall-to-wall people and no deodorant. It's one of the conferences that you go to where, like, you could go to parties and just wear a onesie pajama and just run around the hotel all night and just have an incredible time. And then during the day, meet the guys from MIT who do the Ig Nobel Awards. One of the people who does the Ig Nobles at Aresia is also the inventor, one of the inventors or patent holders of the first 3D printer.
Okay.
And, you know, the guy just is half naked, covered in silver and holds a spotlight. He has invented the human spotlight. It's a great convention. My favorite talks at Aresia are back-to-back, which is the year in science and the year in bad science. And it's the best two panels of the year. It's always a blowout. Like, everybody, as goofy and nerdy as the other stuff is, the number of high-level scientists that I accidentally know is really odd.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine?
And that's, you know, part of the geek culture too. Like, there's so much happening now with, you say, like, you know, people know me from as Nixon, but they know me that mainly a lot of my presences are actually person to person, whether I'm going to like gaming cafes or personal experiences or the other truly geeky thing, which I do, which is LARPing, which most people only know about through the lens of Hollywood, which I think is hilarious. There's so much internet and culture in Boston. I know it's true, but it's also in all the other cities in the U.S. that I find that a lot of engineers put a premium on experience stuff. So you have a lot of people doing geek conferences like Aresia or Boscone, or they're doing things like going to gaming cafes or adventure pubs.
What about rolling the 2D10 to play some D&D?
Oh, that's huge right now. Do you know about the critical role effect?
No.
So Dungeons & Dragons, a game that many of us played a lot, has gone through a recent renaissance. About 6-7 years ago, could be 10, they came out with the fourth version of D&D, and it was a disaster. It was, nobody wanted it. Another company packaged a all but D&D version of it called Pathfinder. And Pathfinder is very popular. And essentially they did D&D better than the D&D people. And so being owned by the same people who do magic cards, Wizards of the Coast.
Okay.
The D&D minds decided to reconvene, take into account that D&D people practically invented computer gaming, and to take everything that has been learned in gaming and put out a completely different but the same product that was superior. And that's D&D 5e. I played D&D 5, didn't do any of the versions in between my classic AD&D. I did a little bit of 3.5 and I tried Pathfinder, but I've actually come back into it. And the big thing with D&D is it is now selling more than it did back in the 80s when it boomed because of Twitch streaming, YouTube. Twitch is the thing that drives me.
So people are Twitch streaming, like playing board games and the DM and, with his like screen setup and all that stuff.
And what the Critical Role is these voice actors who are in all the video games and anime. They are friends. Actually, I had friends who I LARPed with in the 90s moved to LA and were friends with these people already. So actually, I knew friends of the Critical Role folks. And a lot of my friends are in voice acting who went to LA, not all of them, but more than a couple. And so these voice actors were already playing D&D together. And this is like LA's big secret. Apparently there's a whole bunch of really nerdy people in LA. And now that it's okay to come out as a D&D person, but this Critical Role group really kind of created a wave and led by Matt Mercer, or the Matt Mercer Effect, was a super talented DM. And they started presenting their stuff on Twitch stream and on YouTube, and it blew up. Their D&D game, I mean, they're pros, right? I mean, they do voices, they're hilarious. They know how to yes and share with each other.
Warrior is about to die.
Oh, God, Gauntlet. I love that. I actually have a friend in Quebec who installs video game equipment in retirement homes for people and does studies about how video games and doing video games is really healthy for. But yes, I love like Gauntlet and that stuff. But these guys were professional voice actors and this Critical Role thing just blew up. And so D&D is huge right now. People can locally go to gaming stores and have professional DMs. They can, Stephen Colbert recently did a thing for Red Nose Day where he had Matt Mercer come and give him a personal dungeon mastering experience. And as a result, you know, Colbert raised money for the foundation, for the Red Nose Foundation. D&D is huge right now with especially the larger geek community, but it just surprises me as an older person how people can just watch Twitch streams of other people playing games endlessly. Like it is such a big business right now.
It's
like
been monetized.
It's been very well monetized. I know people who are making a living off of it, or at least some semblance of a living. And it's a great, like, I wouldn't have predicted it, but it's a huge deal.
YouTube monetization in general kind of blows my mind and makes me show my age.
You know, I would turn to you. I mean, we've all kind of quietly modified how we do stuff. I mean, you have a Netflix account. You probably do Hulu. If you do Hulu, you're probably planning on going to Disney Plus. Aside from sports packages, I can't imagine how I would even watch cable television anymore. With that modern geekery moving to the places where they want to go, for some reason, Twitch and watching other people play games and interacting with them, I mean, you can interact with them on a stream where there are maybe 100,000 other people.
Yeah, it's like a live version of Twitter while you're all sharing some experience, so this thing that you're really excited about.
And that's, you know, and that's cyberpunk, right? Mm. That's the future that, you know, when we were kids, we imagined that hot, fast, geek future where, you know, just knowing a little bit more technology than the person standing next to me would help us kind of take that next step.
Now, you mentioned a verb a couple times in your ramble there. You know where I'm going. You said LARPing, which I believe that is live action role playing.
Yes.
Can you describe that to the uninitiated, please?
Yes. So live action role playing if I have to define what D&D is, we've gone too far, but it is essentially playing D&D, but instead of rolling dice, there are two styles of live action role play. They are typically called buffer or physical style. Buffer, as you can suspect, means that you're hitting somebody with something physically soft and not dangerous.
We are the knights who say...
These are like the big PVC padded sword type things?
You know, that technology is gone. Now they use kite carbon fiber wind kite rods inside there.
Huh.
And it's super light. Like, I wouldn't want to hit somebody with a piece of PVC that had tubing on. I was a plumber as a kid growing up. And I mean, that's if physical weight still hits, no matter how much compression there is, right?
Yeah.
But actually, I'm very good friends with a local regional resource who's a national resource, B3 Studios. And they have a manufacturing facility that has a robotic water jet printer that cuts out these swords perfectly.
Hmm.
And they're super safe. And the people who play them are martial artists and fencers, real fencers. I got into a tournament. I do a tournament every year when I go to Canada, but you know, they have football in Canada, but it's not like, you know, American football, like the big jock football captain thing. Up there, it's, you know, fencing is like a really big deal, and it is in Europe too. When I'm competing with people internationally, I'm actually trying to hit them with, yes, soft sticks, but they're real fencers and they're really good. And I have to say, when you try to hit somebody with something and they don't want to be hit, it's fun. That's the one style, is hitting people with numbers and laughing and joking and those types of things. And the other is theater style, where, you know, we agree ahead of time, we're just going to make pretend, have fun. And at the face of it, it seems completely ridiculous. But look at any fandom, you know, people get dressed up to go to a football game, or they, you know, buy all the shirts and jerseys of their friends. But one of the really big hobbies that geeks have is recreation. And they do stuff like, they used to do stuff like rent.
Abnormally good attention to detail.
Yes. And there was an engineer, software engineer I knew who, sorry, a physical engineer I knew who joined the Society for Creative Anachronism and became a master of Elizabethan period sewing. It was just so technical. It gave him something to do that wasn't crushing numbers and sending people emails about their poor attendance at meetings. And that kind of interest, you know, you can do a lot of recreation stuff. You know, they do Rev War, Civil War recreation stuff, but that's kind of, you know, you get dressed up in an outfit and you go reenact something that people have done. Whereas there's a group in New England called NELCO, which is a New England interactive literature group. And the interactive literature part of LARPing is you can go and have an experience where you pretend to be a committed person in an institution, or you can do a Harry Potter wizard thing. You know, it can be as light or as heavy as you want, but these experiences are happening all over the country. There's one in New Orleans called Armistice Arcane. You get dressed up in like 19th century gaslight outfits and talk about, you know, that the whole thing with like secret societies and Masons. You pretend like you're one of those people for a weekend when you're in New Orleans in places that are completely immersive. Or you can run around the woods wearing elf ears and hit people with soft sticks, and it's freaking hilarious. And do not think for a minute the people who do that don't have an exact sense of humor. But, you know, when I started doing this as a kid, it wasn't really a big deal. Like, it was something that everybody kind of kept hidden. It was kind of like the thing that you did that you didn't tell all of your friends about. You just told
the jock kids were definitely going to beat you up if they heard about it.
Nerds! 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 Nerds!
And now these days, geez, like everybody wants to do something like this because all of our other interactions are electronic. So the idea of getting in a nice outfit and experiencing something like an escape room or running around doing something is a very immersive, attractive thing. So there's a lot of that stuff being done. There's a local convention called Intercon that runs here in New England that has short form, 3-hour little things. You just dip your toe in and do like little quick stories. But the real thing that happens at Intercon is you discover who your absolutely nerdiest friends are. And one of the things that I've found, especially about geeks in general, and this is good for bringing it back to underserved, which is you never know every white or hat, black hat hacker. I certainly haven't. And I haven't met every LARPer. Every once in a while, I'll meet a friend and I'll join a new game. And I will meet a group of people who were like 1 degree separate from me.
Mm-hmm.
But we're constantly running in a different group. And that's really what, you know, bringing that back to like Aresia or going to, you know, gaming stores like Pandemonium or Battlegrounds. you get to meet and interact with geeks who you wouldn't otherwise know. And that sort of live meetup is really, I think, the way that a lot of geeks now are kind of creating these new communities. And LARPing is, you know, if you go to a LARP convention, people know that you're a baller.
Happy Baller Friday!
Hell yeah, man. Baller Friday! Baller Friday!
You are game to be as ridiculous or as fun as you want to be, but some of the best friends I've met doing some amazing things do this. And it seems, like I said, at the face of it, completely ridiculous. On the other hand, I have an incredible amount of time. My kids love it. It's actually strongly geared for adults, to be honest. Not everybody wants to get into a very intense role play with a 12-year-old. Mm. You know, it takes all types. But generally, a lot of these games are 18 plus or 21 plus. There was one I went to in Rhode Island where we were joking around doing consultancy, and it turns out one of the hiring managers for one of the software companies we work for also does this, and that's how him and I are friends. So yeah. It's just like, well, I'm going to go see this guy and we'll network over the weekend. But, you know, that's how a lot of geeks and software people are meeting each other. And when they have that kind of additional context, I think it really helps elaborate things. And, you know, it leads to funny stuff. Like, that's how I met my fiance, which is I met her at Aresia. She was cosplaying as Black Widow during the whole big Avengers thing. Mm-hmm. I was doing a LARP demo for a vampire LARP.
I want to drink your blood.
And of course, I was dressed like a punk from the 90s because I had that outfit just hanging around. When we met each other, like, it was really hard to pay attention to anybody else in the room type thing. Mm-hmm. And after it was over, my friends were all like, oh, you haven't met Adria? And I'm like, no. They're like, yeah. And her kid's about your kid's age. And then she started dating me and talking to her friends. And she'd say, hey, I'm dating this great new guy. It's Nixon. And they'd be like, you're dating Nixon? So you think that geek communities are tight and, you know, if you as a developer or you as an engineer think you've met everybody, just one ring out, you know, there's more people you've never met. And that's one of the reasons I love Boston. It's one of the reasons actually, now I have friends from the geek community all over the US. I have friends in Austin. Hey Austin. Now I can reach out and find DevOps people in Austin. I can find, you know, software people in Vegas just because people come to national conventions, they, you know, and you meet people and network, and pretty soon you have a brand new group of friends.
Well, Swifty, you have definitely given me a big homework assignment because we do show notes for every episode, and I try to do some Googling, and in the show notes, which you can find at our official website, underserved.libsyn.com, that's underserved.libsyn.com, you could also get a link to it from the Syrinx homepage. I try to do some notes on what we're talking about and do some links to interesting content. So I might actually have to conscript you to help me get all the links for this episode.
I would certainly love to.
Thank you very much for joining us today. This is going to be an action-packed one, maybe our most downloaded yet. So I appreciate you coming on. I'm sure we'll have you again. And we loved having you here on Underserved.
Thank you very much.